behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
I'm Ben Bullen with Scott Benjamin. We are broadcasting live from the somewhat top secret studio here in Atlanta, Georgia, with our super producer, Noel Brown.
Yeah, that's right. And you may or may not hear some lightning outside. I think it's supposed to be a big storm today, so we'll see how that goes.
But let's talk about something as cool, if not cooler, than a big storm.
Yeah, I guess no one's really interested in that. But what they might be interested in would be bare metal cars.
Yes. Now, this is kind of a listener suggestion. We were inspired by this one, right?
In a way, yeah. This is one that came from a listener. His name is Curtis.
Hey, Curtis.
And Curtis wrote in, this is kind of a roundabout thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Curtis wrote in about a topic that we did a podcast on recently, the Allegheny steel cars, the stainless steel cars.
Right. And, they can check out the episode.
Yeah, exactly. Check out the episode. But there's some really good info about those cars out there. What this kind of led to was us investigating something that hot rodders are doing a lot of recently, mm-hmm. and some of the old timers, I guess, are
sure.
kind of interested in this. It's not a new trend, I guess. It's been around a couple of years, maybe.
It's kind of had a resurgence,
yeah,
in some ways.
I guess so, but it's these cars that are not stainless,
mm-mm.
just maybe mild steel, but they're leaving it bare. There's no finish on the thing at all. There's no paint.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have the right car to do this, as we'll talk about. But
right.
But it's kind of an interesting technique, I guess.
Yeah, and it makes for a singular car, especially when you're able to maintain the steel. Now, sometimes this will be bare in the fact that the only thing on it is a clear coat. And we understand,
mm-hmm.
of course, that they're ongoing, surprisingly passionate debates about that.
Oh,
right.
Oh, yeah.
Now.
You know, we've got so many little things about this that we want to talk about during today's podcast. I mean, there's a lot of back and forth about how, if this looks good, if it doesn't look good,
mm-hmm.
ways to maintain the bare metal. If you can maintain the bare metal, why would you ever want to do this, that type of thing?
Right. Some people think it's just heretical to do something like this to a classic car.
Sure,
actually.
Some people say, like, well, I know how to prevent rust on a bare metal car. You paint it.
Hey-o.
That's how you do it, right? And, that's the kind of response you'll get on a lot of these message boards. But, there's other groups of people that are just as passionate about leaving their car bare metal. And then they've got, particular ways that they've achieved that and then how they maintain that. So there's all these different areas where people have a lot of advice to give.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, I've tried this or I haven't tried this, and, mm-hmm. and here's my advice on this. This will never work. This always works. And there's a lot of this back and forth. So whatever we tell you today, investigate it for yourself.
Yeah.
That's all I can leave it at, I guess, maybe, is that you need to investigate all of this yourself if you plan on doing this yourself. And I'll clue you in on a little something here early on. I've got experience in this.
Ah, yes. And let's go ahead and do our usual teaser for the end here. Scott, I'm thinking, unless you've already got something up your sleeve for the end, I'm thinking that we go through this podcast,
mm-hmm.
and here's how we do it, maybe.
Okay.
We talk about the methods people use for stripping cars.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about some shops that are doing this.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. Some examples of cars, right?
Sure.
And some of the things that you need to do after the car is stripped down.
Ah, that's the important part.
Right. That's the big build.
Yeah, the meat and potatoes of this mm-hmm. whole thing is how to maintain that sheen or that finish.
And then maybe we end this way. Maybe we end with you revealing some of your mysterious past experience.
Maybe that's the way to do it. But you know what? I want to take one quick little side trip here.
Yes, let's go.
And this is going to be brief, I promise. This was a Facebook conversation that I had with somebody recently. Our good friend El Buche. And
yeah.
El Buche was printing one night late, as he does. He runs a print shop.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned that, he had just listened to the Andretti podcast.
Yes. The Andretti curse.
Yeah, that's right. And, El Buche is a longtime old friend of car stuff. We've had a lot of back and forth.
Oh, gosh, since your high-speed stuff.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of conversations back and forth with him and some great topic suggestions from him. But he also said that, you know, you may want to investigate the Bentonhausen family with their trouble at Indy as well. And I said, you know what, that's a very good point. I wonder why, you know, we hear so much about the Andretti's right now. And I think it's, and my answer to him was, I think that it's because the Andretti's are still in the game. They still got a chance to win this.
Yeah.
Whereas the Bentonhausens, they're pretty much, well, they're done with it. I mean, they started in 1950, and I think it went until the 1970s, I think, or the early 1970s. And they just don't have any more opportunities to win Indy. But the Bentonhausen family, starting with Tony Sr., he started out in, again, I mentioned 1950. He had 14 starts and no wins at Indy. So, you know, this is another... You know, another family that has this supposed Indy curse. Now, he later also died at Indy while testing in 1961.
Wow.
So that's a long, long time ago. But he had three sons. And his sons were Gary, Tony Jr., and Merle. And Gary had 21 starts at Indy, Ben, with no wins.
Jeez.
So 14 for Tony Sr., 21 for Gary. Tony Jr. had another 11 starts with no wins. So we're talking a family now with 46 Indy starts, no
wins.
Now, I know the Andretti's were up in the 60s at this point.
Yeah.
They had a lot more people because they had, you know, Jeff and Marco and Michael and Mario. And you know, just there's a long list of people, you know, in the Andretti family that are still attempting to try to try to win Indy.
Yeah.
But again, the Bentonhausen family, I mean, it's pretty much over for them at this point. They did have another brother, Merle, that I mentioned. And I don't think Merle's career lasted long enough for him to get to Indy. Because his inaugural season, he had a horrific accident at Michigan International Speedway. Something I'll leave you to investigate that on your own. But
okay.
He's still alive.
Oh, good.
But he had a career-ending accident within three laps of his career starting. So that gives you an idea of how bad this wreck was. So anyways... El Buche, I guess I want to say it the right way. I always get the pronunciation wrong.
Yes.
We appreciate the comment, and you know, I don't know if there's enough there for a whole podcast on that topic. There may be. I don't know. We'll look into it. But that kind of gives you the rundown of the Bentonhausen family and their, you know, ill-fated Indy attempts.
And so that has nothing to do with bare metal cars, right? No, I'm just
No, it doesn't. No, that's just that was something that, you know, it
weighed on you.
It did, because, you know, I talked to him and I thought, you know, we were giving everybody, you know, this Andretti sob story about, you know, what's happened in Indy, and we ignored the Bentonhausens, and El Buche is right. I mean, we needed to mention the Bentonhausens.
And so we wanted to make things right, so we put the listener mail in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think everybody's probably pretty cool with that. So we can. So now, you can be that person, guys. Whenever there's a conversation, someone goes, "Well, hey, have you heard about the Andretti curse?" You can answer in an equally strange voice, I guess. Like, "Oh yeah, well, of course. That's yesterday's news. Have you heard about the Bentonhausen curse?"
That's right. You can give them a little deep dive in history on that one, right?
Deep cut.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Scott, you remember in Monty Python where someone would say, "And now for something completely different?"
I do.
Okay. Well, this is that part of our show.
Got it.
I read a book, or excuse me, I listened to a book.
Ah, you have to be very specific about these audiobooks, right?
Yeah, man. Here we are living in the future, listening to audiobooks.
Hoverboards and all.
Hoverboards and all. And wait, hoverboards aren't out yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm waiting.
Okay, me too. Let's pre-order. In the meantime, let's talk about Audible.com. I got some good news recently when I went to audiblepodcast.com/carstuff, which is where you can go. Remember that. It's going to be important later. And I checked out a little book called From a Buick 8.
Really?
Yes.
I can't imagine what the subject of that book would be.
It's really interesting to me, at least. You know, I'm a Stephen King fan. You're a Stephen King fan.
Yes.
I think we talked earlier at some point about the book Christine.
Sure we did.
And what From a Buick 8 is about is it's about a mysterious thing that may or may not be of this world.
Hmm.
And You know, I don't want to spoil it, but it's two things that I love, which are classic horror and great cars.
I've got to tell you, I've never heard of this one.
One of his newer, I guess, newer ones compared to his other stuff.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, I'm excited about this one because you know I'm a fan of Christine.
Yes.
And this seems like a logical extension of that.
Yeah, it's neat, and it's told, I don't want to give away any spoilers, but I will say about the structure of it, it's told in a really interesting frame structure, mm-hmm. which I think is a neat way to encounter the story. But the most immediate way to encounter the story is, remember that internet address I said earlier?
Yeah.
audiblepodcast.com/carstuff. You can go in and get a free audiobook of your choice. Now, we're not saying that it has to be from a Buick 8, right?
No. I mean, you can go to, audiblepodcast.com/carstuff and download anything that you want out of the entire selection. The whole library is open.
The site is your oyster. Anything from Cat in a Hat to Crime and Punishment.
Well, they say they have over 100,000 titles. So mm-hmm. over 100,000 titles to choose from. I think you'll find something.
And I really enjoyed From a Buick 8, so I'd be interested to hear what other people have to say about it. And that is the end of my completely different sidebar.
Perfect. Now let's get back to bare metal cars. How about that?
So let's talk about some deep cut hot rods. There's a place called Gibbs, or a company called Gibbs, and one of the things that they love to show off is a 1930 Ford Model A Roadster pickup.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a little bit different because, of course, it has no paint.
Yeah, this is probably one of the better examples that you can go out there and take a look at. It's just one of the easiest ones to find, maybe.
Yeah.
You search, bare metal hot rod or bare metal car.
Sure.
And
yeah.
This is likely to be one of the first ones that comes up. Of course, Google Images will show you 1,000 bare metal cars that are out there, or maybe 100. There aren't that many, really. Surprisingly,
yeah.
But this Gibbs bare metal car, that, and Gibbs is the brand of product that they use to treat the surface, so that's what keeps it in bare metal and in pristine condition
without rusting.
Exactly, and I got more to say about that later. I can't tell you about that now, but that bare metal roadster that you mentioned, mm-hmm. it's a beautiful car. I mean, I do think it's somewhere in the Southwest,
mm-hmm.
So it's in a dry climate that helps.
Yeah.
But I can tell you right now, you don't have to be in a perfectly dry climate for this to work for you.
Yeah, this is not necessarily weather dependent.
Mm-hmm.
There is some weather that's going to make your job easier, but there's always a way to get around this. Scott, what would somebody do if they start off and they have paint on their car?
Oh, okay, this is where it all comes down to, you know, kind of your own mindset on this. I mean, do you think that if you look at these online,
yeah.
and you can find, again, 100 examples of bare metal cars, you've got to really determine if your car is going to look good in bare metal, if it's been damaged a lot, if there's a lot of Bondo and things like that on it, you know, a lot of body flaws that aren't showing up when there's paint on the car. You have to have the right type of car. You can't do this if you have composite panels, of course. You have
right.
to have metal panels. That makes sense.
You actually
right?
do have to have a steel car.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, and I guess as far as bumpers go, you know, a lot of cars have steel panels, but composite bumpers.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen cars that have gone bare metal other parts, like maybe just the hood, maybe
mm-hmm.
just the tailgate, you know, things like that. You know, there are even some sport tuner cars that do this.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, creatively rust the car, you know, in some way with a pattern.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that going on. You just have to kind of pick and choose what would look good. And I think a lot of the reason why people would do this is that they would like to show off their metalworking skills. You know, a lot of, hot rodders, mm-hmm. are very, very well versed at, you know, creating pieces of art, really.
Welding, fabrication.
Yeah, and then smoothing that and making it all match perfectly mm-hmm. and everything. It's not real rough, you know, where you're going to rely on body filler to fill in areas and then paint over it and no one sees it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of, you know, body men or body people, I guess, are very confident about their work and their skill, and they like to show that off. And what better way to do that than to, show off this naked car, I guess, with no mm-hmm. paint on it, right?
I think that's a good point. And, this is something where that you'll see at a car show. A car show, I think, is by far the most likely place where you're going to see a well-maintained bare metal car.
Yeah, like a hot rod show is probably the best place to find
Perfect,
something like this.
Yeah.
You're not going to find it at, you know, some of the, the shows around town. Like I go to a caffeine and carburetors type show. You know, so I don't know
octane and caffeine.
Yeah, all those. They're all over the United States. Every little town seems to have one of these now happening on weekends. And I've talked about this with other listeners, but I can tell you that I haven't seen one bare metal car there the entire time I've been going. And this is a pretty big region, a pretty big area that we draw from for this show, and it's a huge show. I don't know how many cars attend. I mean, I'd guess, but I'd say 1,000. It's a big, big show.
That's huge.
I mean, maybe less. Maybe I'm way off, but it seems like it takes forever to walk through it on the weekend. Mm. But I've never seen a bare metal car there. I've seen rat rods, you know, that are left to rust and, that type of thing, but never one that's maintained a bare metal finish that's not rusted. It gives you an idea that it's kind of a rare thing to find even now, even after, several years of this happening. There are a lot of different ways to get from a painted car down to a stripped car, I guess. Maybe that's what we need to talk about.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see. We've got a pretty good list here. We've got some different ways to do this. Mm-hmm. Let's start with, the most obvious, which is sanding.
Yeah. Hand sanding?
Okay, let's start with hand sanding.
Yeah, well, hand sanding, that's a rough way to go, Ben. I mean, rather use, some type of, mechanical advantage, because there's lots of tools that can strip paint a lot faster than hand
sanding.
One person
for sure. Hand sanding. Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow. That's
exactly,
something where you're like, I need some time to think. I need several
years
to think.
Yeah, cause car paint is tough stuff.
Right.
And it's difficult to take it off, just hand sanding. So that's probably the least likely way to do it. But
yeah,
it's one that, people do use for small areas.
It's technically possible. Let's put it that way, to do a whole car, but it would take forever. If you are sanding, you are by far much more likely to use a sanding machine.
Yeah, sure. Some type of, angle grinder, maybe something like that. Or, even, I mean, it sounds awful, but you may be using a random orbital sander or something like to cut through the layers of paint. There's so many different techniques to be used. I mean, people use these clean and strip discs. They can be attached to drills, or they use them attached to, again, angle grinders.
Yeah.
These very abrasive pads that strip away paint, but they don't really harm the metal below them. Those are very, very handy to have around. There's also blasting. You can do sand or media blasting.
Right.
Like walnut shells or plastic beads or something that's not going to generate a lot of heat on the surface of the vehicle.
Right. And there are purpose-made abrasives for that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not a body guy by any means. So I don't want to tell you what to use, what not to use. I mean, we're going to kind of gloss over this.
Yeah, just saying how it happens.
Yeah, if you're going to do this, really investigate what works best for your application. But, there's also dustless blasting. There's, there's soda blasting. There's dry ice blasting.
And blasting kits are affordable online if you want to pick one up.
Can be reasonable. Yeah. A small generator powered or even compressor tank powered blaster.
Yeah.
The problem is there's a lot of cleanup involved usually with something like this.
Yeah, because what it's doing essentially is just wait for it, blasting a bunch of tiny, tiny abrasives at a car body and knocking paint off.
Sure, and that's going to end up on every shelf
everywhere.
And container and ledge in your garage and inside the car, of course. And not only the abrasives that you blasted at the car, but also all the little paint chips that fly out there.
Exactly. There's another one.
What's that?
Chemical stripping.
Chemical stripping is a big one. That's a popular one, but a lot of people find fault with that in that. The chemicals seep into corners, and then if you do plan to paint ever eventually, that may be a concern. But then again, if you're going to leave your car bare metal, maybe chemical stripping isn't such a bad idea.
Yeah, that's true.
There's also chemical dipping, where you dip the whole thing in acid. Now, that's really expensive because you have to strip the entire car.
That's not really a do-it-at-home.
No, that's not a do-it-at-home thing. There's, of course, wire brushes and sanding discs. You can do it with steel wool and a combination of steel wool and the chemical stripping. You can do that with all different types because people tell you don't use steel wool, don't use stainless steel, but use copper or brass because that's more, less abrasive rather.
Yeah.
Boy, there's just so many different pieces of advice that you can give or get from people about this. You can also use a heat gun, which is probably the
most unorthodox.
Yeah,
let's say it that way.
Yeah, maybe.
It's kind of a MacGyver way to do it.
Yeah, I guess so. A lot of people don't like to do that because, you know, on bigger panels, that leads to warping. So
yeah.
Heat gun is a different one. But you'd use a heat gun with a razor blade in front of it, and you'd scrape the paint off your car.
Yeah.
It's very effective, very fast. But, again, that heat buildup is what you want to avoid.
Right.
We mentioned chemical stripping. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, are proponents of that type of stripping, I guess, if you're going to leave the car bare metal.
Right, because it doesn't – first off, it gets things off of the metal,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't have some of the same risk of deformities, uneven removals, you mm-hmm. know. It has some advantages. But as we know, getting the paint off of the car is at most half the battle, right?
Well, yeah, I guess it is. I mean, it's – time-consuming. It takes a long, long time to do something like this if you're not using, like, a blasting. Because if you do, I'll be honest with you, you can do an ice blasting, you know, the dry ice blasting or dustless blasting.
Yeah.
They can come out and do your car for $1,000 in your own driveway for, you know, it'll take them maybe an hour. Just an hour.
Wow.
And there's very little, I mean, there's some real benefits to doing it this way in the time, you know, I guess region.
Yeah,
it makes a lot of sense that way as far as time spent doing this. It will give you a finish that, you know, is well, it's really good. I mean, it's a great place to start from.
Uh-huh.
But it's fast, but it does cost you $1,000 versus, you know, going buying a couple of gallons of stripper and using a razor blade to scrape away the paint
and learning something.
Yeah, and learning something. I mean, there's a lot of lessons to be learned while doing this. That's for sure. There's so many different ways.
So let's talk about maintaining it after we have it in metal.
Okay, so we've already got it all stripped down, right? You got the whole thing stripped down. This is a big question too. How do you keep it from rusting? Because a lot of, you know, have you ever had a dent in your car, Ben?
Yeah.
In a metal panel?
Mm, yes.
With a scratch?
I think just the dent.
Okay, because I've had some with a scratch before, and it's when I lived in Michigan.
Okay.
A dent with a scratch. And almost immediately, that scratch starts to rust.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And that really, really bothered me about that because, you know that that's just starting to eat away at the paint, you know, below the paint and mm-hmm. the everything that's around it.
Yeah.
It's never going to be the same, right?
Yeah.
You're right. It's growing every day. Well, if you've got a whole car that's in bare metal, now conventional wisdom says you should probably prime it immediately afterwards, right? You sand it down, you prime it, and you protect it, right?
Right. You put on several layers of coats because otherwise, depending on the climate, almost immediately rust can set in.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're down here in the south. It's very humid.
Yeah, it's a swamp.
In the southeast, mm-hmm. and it's very, very humid. And flash rusting happens almost immediately on something like this. In fact, if you strip a car and then you wash it afterwards, which is not really recommended, but if you wash it down with, you know, just regular water out of the hose or, you know, whatever type of tap water, almost immediately you're going to see some flash rusting start to happen on this thing. I mean, it could be within an hour or less.
It takes hold.
Even minutes. So, you know, you've got to really think about this before you do it. And how do you maintain that kind of surface that you want without it rusting over? A lot of people will say you put a wax coat on it. That's mm-hmm. That's one way to do it.
Yeah, no, we should point out that nobody really agrees.
No.
On this. We're in the brave new world of coating metal surfaces.
This is why it's so difficult to talk about this really as a subject. It's such a cool thing to get out there and let people know about. And I think more than anything, I just want listeners to know that it's out there.
Yeah. And check out some photos.
But there's so much back and forth about what works, what doesn't work on this between people that, you know, have tried all these different things in different climates. And, you know, the wax thing is great for some people, but they say you'll never ever get that wax off of the surface of the bare metal because it penetrates the metal and you're never going to get it out of every little, you know, nook and cranny
every
on the vehicle.
Pore,
behind. Yeah, exactly. How are you going to do that? You'll never be able to paint that car ever again. Right?
And some people say WD-40 might work well because it is a water repellent. That's what it's built to do. But I've heard that reference to people who are racing in the desert in bare metal cars, and those cars are not in the weather all year.
Exactly. And you know what? That's going to lead to even bigger problems. Have you ever tried to paint anything that has a spot of oil on it? There's a fisheye problem. It's what they call a fisheye.
Right.
And it's an area that just the paint will not adhere to. And WD-40, it's great at penetrating, you know, the surface of the bare metal vehicle, and, you know, it'll stick around, and it creeps into every little corner. The problem is it creeps into every little corner and it sticks to the vehicle. So,
right.
Even if you wash it down with Dawn dishwashing liquid, which a lot of people recommend because that cuts grease and it really does work.
It's still a point of no return.
It really is. WD-40 is something that I personally would not recommend putting on a bare metal car. If you ever plan on selling it to somebody that may want to paint it eventually, it's just kind of a nice thing to not do that. Other people say that, you should clear coat it. This is a big point of divide among people. It seems like an obvious choice. You could put a satin clear coat on it. You could put a glossy clear coat on it.
It looks great, right?
It would look great. Yeah, that's right. But the problem is a lot of people say that still, even so, even if you cover it and you coat it, you're going to see rust creep into that bare metal surface below the clear coat within a year. You'll see little fingers of rust start to appear. And that's from people that have done this. They've bare metaled their car, clear coated it, and thought, well, I'm done. I don't have to do anything more to this besides wash it and wax it. And they have seen it happen. They've seen it with their own eyes. And people, again, will come back with, well, this brand doesn't do it. This brand, you've obviously used a brand that allowed moisture to get below the surface.
Ah. Okay, wait. Noel, are you giving us the hand? Okay. Oh, looks like we have reached a stopping point.
All right.
We might have to make a sequel.
Yeah, we've been kind of teasing that there's a little surprise here at the end. Maybe we'll just have to wait until next episode, but maybe you picked up on some of the hints along the way.
Yes. Well, maybe they did if you haven't. To quote Snoop Dogg, chill till the next episode when we'll be back. In the meantime, you can find us on Facebook. You can drop us a line on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. You can also skip the whole social media thing and send us an email directly at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.